Well, there may also be some comfort in that this won't be the first time Notre Dame has risen. As we've been reminded, in the early 19th century, the huge building was crumbling. In 1831, Victor Hugo wrote his now classic novel, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, a story of the love of the deformed, deaf, and partially blind bell ringer Quasimodo, maybe a stand-in for the decaying building, for the beautiful Esmeralda, perhaps a symbol of France. The novel captivated the country and directly led to the cathedral's total rebirth, a new sacristy, the spire we watched tumble yesterday, gargoyles, a new organ, and more. MIT cultural historian Catherine Clark has been thinking about this. Professor, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And you told us that you were just teaching this to your students. You know, so many have said that the real star of the book is Notre Dame. What do you say?
I think that's true. The real star of the book is the cathedral. And it's like when you read Moby Dick and you skip all the parts about the whale paintings. Notre Dame is a book that is largely about the cathedral. There are two full chapters that are descriptions of the cathedral, and the story has been added in order to flesh out why this building matters.
And what a story. I mean, I recommend people find the original 1939 film. Let's listen to just a little bit. Quasimodo, the recluse hunchback, swinging along the building's facade. Esmeralda, accused of being a witch. She's going to be hung right on the plaza outside. In this 1939 version, she's approached by a priest on the plaza as she kneels. Esmeralda, played by Maureen O'Hara.
You've been kind to me. I kneel before you, innocent of crime.
I believe you. I cannot allow this girl to do public penance on holy ground because she is not guilty.
Then she will hang without public penance.
You won't dare.
She is a witch and must die. Take it away.
And the crowd, the mob gathered, goes nuts. She is going to be hung when the hunchback, played by Charles Laughton, looking like a human gargoyle, swings down, seizes her, pulls her up to the cathedral, and you have to listen closely as he yells those famous words.
Sanctuary! Sanctuary! Thank heaven, the sanctuary will
save her. Oh no, she killed one of us and must die regardless. We will go to the king and force him to suspend sanctuary.
So people watching on a nearby balcony, a woman says, thank heaven the sanctuary will save us. And a man says, no, she killed one of us. She must die. And we will go to the king to suspend sanctuary. Funny, a word, Professor, that's very much in the news today, sanctuary.
Absolutely.
Was Notre Dame a sanctuary? Explain that.
So all churches were sanctuaries in the Middle Ages. They're places where civil law doesn't apply. So you can go to a religious site and claim sanctuary. And that actually worked in much more distant past around standing stones in the north of Europe, that these sites of worship could also be sites where the laws didn't apply and you could ask for sanctuary.
We'll talk more about what Victor Hugo was saying in the book and what the film then showed us about Notre Dame.
So it's absolutely a love story to the church and to this building. But Victor Hugo is not someone who is a fervent Catholic in this moment. And so in part what the book is about is thinking about the structure and why it matters in a world where kings and religion don't exist in the same way anymore. So you have to remember that Victor Hugo is writing after the French Revolution. He's a young man when he writes this book and sees the tumult of Napoleon, the tumult of the Restoration, and wonders what French civilization means once the kings and the church don't matter anymore.
Napoleon, who is another who oddly saved the cathedral and then crowned himself and his wife in it. And you mentioned the French Revolution, another time the building was sacked.
Yes.
It's amazing what this building has come back from.
Yes, it's amazing what it's come back from, but I think also we have to remember that in each of these instances of its return, it's been another layer of history that's written onto the building. And this is what's so interesting about buildings and cities, is that they sediment time. There are these accretions of time. So the spire was an original. It's added in the 19th century, but it's part of the building. And so in part, what we will have lost with this fire is that layering of history, that you could build a 19th century spire on top of a roof that's supported by 12th century oaks.
Yeah, which are gone.
Which are gone.
I just want to remind us of some of the words of Victor Hugo in the book that resonate now. It's difficult not to sigh, not to wax indignant before the numberless degradations and mutilations which time and men have both caused the venerable monument to suffer. Speaking about Notre Dame then, and today.
Yeah, and last night there was this moment where it looked like were the walls going to fall? Were the firemen and women going to be able to save the actual physical stone structure? And it was saved. And in that moment, all I could think of was, will these walls survive? And they have. And that means it can be built again. And I'd like to add just another line from Hugo's novel, in which he says, time is the architect, the people are the masons. So this is a structure that is built by time and history itself, and each generation adds their stones.
That's some comfort, yeah. You know, that we're maybe part of a continuum,
yeah,
not the end.
Yeah.
MIT cultural historian Catherine Clark, thank you so much.
Thanks.